It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 335, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I break down the BYU offense, including playing a game of buy or sell with some of the top fall camp storylines. We also preview some of our opponents, including Wisconsin, Boise State, and Northern Illinois. I will apologize, due to time, I had to edit out some of the beginning of this podcast, so we might make some jokes later on that don't make a ton of sense, but maybe that's just par for the course. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. You can find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And listen to us talk about sandwiches, hot dogs, and tacos right now. All right, Matt. The debate, I can't believe we're still talking about it's a hot dog a sandwich.
How long has this been going on?
It's been going on for months. But we have more stuff to talk about.
See, I feel like it's like, is it time to let this go? But people keep chiming in on it.
People must love it. Our brother Don does.
People love hot dog sandwiches, that's for sure.
He says on Twitter, and if you want to jump on in, climb on in the tweet bag, you can do that on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Don says this, is a taco a torta? No. They're two different words for a reason.
They're both Spanish words, actually, in this case.
Do you need two tortillas to truly be a torta? I don't even know where we're going.
Are we talking like the Taco Bell Mexican pizza here? Is that what we're talking about?
I'm not sure. Is Torchy's really a sandwich shop? Okay, before we go there, okay, Johnny Ashton has something that's related but different. We'll come back to both of these on Facebook. And if you want to do a tweet bag question on Facebook, you can do that at facebook.com/riseandshout. Here's Johnny's. All your debates about sandwiches remind me of an ongoing debate. These are ongoing debates, okay, that he has with his wife, a burrito versus a taco. His wife claims it only has to do whether the tortilla is open or closed, even if it has the exact same stuff. But that doesn't make any sense to Johnny. Johnny says if the burrito falls open halfway through, is he suddenly eating a taco? If someone hands him a taco and he holds it closed, is he suddenly eating a burrito? He claims that burrito is a subset of taco. Burritos are a type of taco with a flour tortilla. If it has a corn tortilla, it's a taco but not a burrito. I don't think that's it, Johnny. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not the kind of tortilla that determines taco versus.
Yeah, I don't think that's where you draw the line here.
I don't. But, hey, I mean, everybody, tomato, tomato, taco, torta. Where do you stand on the taco versus burrito debate? And does it align with Torchy's menu? Okay, here's the thing.
So,
I've never even thought about the taco versus burrito debate.
I've given this very little thought, but I've already reached a conclusion, which is what I do.
What?
I'm going to go ahead and agree with Sister Ashton on this one.
Did you just call her Sister Ashton?
I don't know Johnny Ashton's wife's first name. Mm. I mean, I think I've seen them on Facebook, but I have no idea what it's.
I've never met the man. Fair enough.
So I'm going to go ahead and agree with Mrs. Ashton here that it's all about if it's folded up, it's a burrito. If it's unfolded, it's a taco. And yes. If you're eating a burrito and it falls open, guess what? It just became a taco. It transformed on you. And if someone hands you a taco and you decide it's too messy and you want to roll it up or fold it up somehow, especially if you close up one end of it, that's a burrito.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't spent a lot of time on this. You know, here's the thing. I go to a taqueria, right? A lot in town. It's a really, really nice place. It's called
Taqueria.
It's called Taco Libre, and, you know, it's kind of street tacos type of thing, and, you know, small corn tortillas, typically, though you can order with flour if you're a communist.
You can order with flour if you want a burrito, according to Johnny Ashton.
Well, maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. Maybe I'm wrong.
I haven't spent a significant amount of time in any country where they really know what they're doing with burritos and tacos, right?
I have, so. But here's the thing. Like burrito, when I've gone to Mexico, they sell tacos. Like burritos isn't as big. I honestly think there might be more burritos sold in the US.
Well, do you know why Americans love the burrito? It's handheld. Easy to eat on the go, and you don't have to hold your head. You don't have to tilt your head to eat it.
And Johnny might be onto something. It's also the flour tortilla. Like, corn tortillas, like, that's... The street tacos are like corn tortillas, right? And at least in Mexico City and northern Mexico. I'm not going to speak for all of Mexico. I, it's dangerous when you start, like, lumping all of cuisine of one country into, like, one bucket, right?
Or, like, an entire two continents into one bucket.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So, anyway, and by the way, torta in Spain and torta in other countries, that's the other problem with the whole taco, torta, burrito debate. And by the way, burrito's not a Spain thing. But this is also, it has evolved over time. It's like Spain and Latin America versus England and us, right? Except more complicated. Maybe not more complicated, because the South, its cuisine's way different than everywhere else, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
It's way different. And then if you come up here to Minnesota, like, all the food's super bland. Like, there's no spices anywhere, really.
You go and in Louisiana, they just use all the spices.
They took them all from the North. They don't let us have any. I don't know why.
Because you don't know what to do with them.
Well, Matt, let's move on from food. Though,
hey, real quick, though, does burrito translate as little donkey?
Correct.
All right, that's what it's I thought. Burro, I took a semester burrito. Of Spanish.
Oh, so good. I'm yeah, pretty you're, much you're, fluent. You're about pretty as dangerous fluent. As Don.
I got an A.
Let's leave language. This stuff, I guarantee we're going to get tons of messages about this. We did not end anything. We basically took the hornet's nest and we put an M80 in the middle of it.
Well, the thing I don't understand, too, and I'm not even going to touch the Torties, is Torties a sandwich shop? No, it's not.
It's a taco shop. It's a taco insane. Shop.
But I even said, you know, I was out for my run Saturday morning. Came out for a long, long run.
Okay.
And I tend to kind of – it's a peaceful time. It's a peaceful time.
All right.
But as I'm running, coming across the other side of the little stream there on the path is a friend of mine who's a listener of the podcast. His name's Shane. Or maybe I passed by him. I don't remember. But I saw him a couple times because it's a loop. And the first time, he's like, hey, I listened to the podcast last week. I said, do you think we need to let go of the sandwich debate? And he just kind of laughed. And then when we came back around, he's like 100 yards away. And now he accosts me. Right? Now he's violating my, like, my quiet, peaceful time as he yells, a hot dog. Hot dogs and hamburgers are their own category. They're not sandwiches. They're their own category. Get over it. And I yelled, a hot dog is a sandwich. And then his wife, who is walking with him, says, a hot dog is not a sandwich. A hot dog is a hot dog. Let it go.
I like these people.
And
I like
thinking to myself, they're wrong in this instance. But I get along with Shane and Bray quite well. But my whole point is, I thought we needed to let go of this whole thing. But people can't move on.
And now
it's
we got taco
into other food categories.
Yeah, we've gone into different languages, for heaven's sakes. Wait until we have the Ukrainian debate and you can tell us about Ukrainian grammar.
They put corn on pizza over there. Like, we can't even get into the food.
They put
it's not
what
even
on pizza?
Yeah, we can't.
What did you just say?
Yeah, you heard me correctly. No, I ordered a pizza once and it had corn on it.
Corn? Like canned corn?
There was corn and shredded chicken and yeah.
That's okay, we need to move on. Let's do Cougars in the News before we lose ourselves here.
Cougars in the News.
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, Taysom Hill, it's pretty good at football.
He's decent. He's so, better at football than I am.
Well, was that ever a debate?
I think it was some people were debating that.
Maybe when he was an infant.
I'm just saying, at some point.
It's probably where it passed debate. You. Toddler, maybe.
At some point. At some point, five. His skills surpassed mine. Sure. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Anyway, he came in, had a great debut, 8 of 9 for 72 yards, rushed 7 times for 52 yards and a touchdown. He's also holding field goals and extra points. He played 27 offensive snaps, 10 special team snaps. So Matt, I tweeted out something that got people like worked up.
You love it when you do this.
Yes. Well, not really. I didn't even think it was a controversial thing to tweet out. Okay? But here's what I tweeted.
You'd be surprised at the things people find controversial.
There's no doubt of that. Taysom keeps looking good in preseason games. Will it make a difference? I said. Will he become more than a good story? I hope so, but I'm not holding my breath either. What's controversial about that?
They're not showing supreme faith in the Taysom man.
I have absolute faith in Taysom. I don't believe
you sound like a hater.
Well, apparently. Jeff Johnson, who's a frequent tweet bagger, he said, see if I can find his.
This is Geoff Johnston,
right? Geoff, yeah. They don't call him that. That's not nice.
I think it's just me that calls him that.
I believe it is just you that calls
him that. Because I'm that guy.
You are that guy. He says, what more of a story do you mean? If he makes the 53-man roster and gets on the field, even in special teams, that's a win. If he's named QB2, that's even better. Only other chance to make splash if Breeze goes down. I want him to make the 53-man roster. That'd be a great story. What I'm talking about is what you and I have talked about on the podcast many times, which is there's a narrative out there that he's the QB of the future. He is not. The Saints do not believe that he is. The evidence is he's playing special team snaps. Sam Darnold is not playing special teams for the Jets in preseason. Is this controversial?
Sam Darnold, I think this is where people get confused, right? I think there's a couple pieces of this. I don't believe it's controversial, right? But Sam Darnold is going to be the starter in week one for the Jets, right?
Also but true. We didn't know that a week ago. I mean, he wasn't even – I mean, until the reports of a week ago, I mean, we didn't know if Darnold was going to be the starter or not. It was likely. But yes, it looks like now it's definite. He's the starter.
Right, but who was their other choice? I don't even know because it's the Jets and it was a bad choice, whatever it is. But say you look at Tyrod Taylor, right?
Sure.
He's in Cleveland?
Correct. He got traded to Cleveland.
Right. So they picked him up because they're going to play him before they have to press Baker Mayfield into service.
Okay. Yes.
Like that's their plan, right?
That's the plan.
So I think here's the analogy. While they're waiting for Baker Mayfield to be ready for prime time, he's not playing special teams.
Fine. Baker Mayfield's a better analogy. You are correct. Good. Yes, absolutely.
So, but, you know, and that one's really clear, right? Because I don't think the Browns, I mean, they may be cute about it, you know, and it's because they don't want to be, you don't need to be disrespectful to Taylor, but they know that Taylor's not their quarterback of the future. Now, Tyrod Taylor may have visions in his mind that he's going to misprove that, right? And that he will become the franchise quarterback there.
He better, and he'll right? Have, I want him.
You want him to feel that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, the difference in New Orleans is nobody has any question about Drew Brees. It's just a question of how long.
Yeah.
Right? At some point, he's going to retire, and who is the heir apparent to the Drew Brees throne?
And it's not
and
Taysom Hill.
Now I'm going to circle back to your point. If the organization believed it was Taysom Hill, he would not be playing special teams.
And I'm not saying that Taysom Hill's not even capable of doing that.
I think that wasn't even my point.
My point is I don't believe the Saints – or the NFL is ever going to think of him that way. They didn't draft him, right? And now he's playing special teams. And by the way, it's super valuable to the Saints if they can have Taysom be QB2, quote-unquote, on most weeks where Breeze is thought to be healthy, and he can play special teams, right? It's an extra roster spot, basically, for them. Right, it's
cool. Oh, and they can do some change of pace stuff.
Yeah, like... he can come in and do a couple of wildcat plays. I mean, I'm not saying that Taysom won't have a role on this team or that it's not a cool story. I'm just saying the whole, like Taysom, every time he does well in games, fans get worked up and some members of the press that this guy's going to be a future NFL quarterback. I don't see any evidence that there's an organization that believes that that's the case. That's all I'm saying. All right, we're moving on. Because we're already like 20 minutes into this podcast.
Why are you such a hater?
Talked about hardly anything. Algie Brown, well, we did talk about sandwiches in Spanish. Algie Brown played 5 snaps for the Kansas City Chiefs. Michael Davis played a little bit. John Denny is going to play basically till, I don't know, I think forever, right?
The end of time.
Yeah, end of time. Hanneman played a little bit for the Browns. Kafusi had a really nice play, an 8-yard loss, and looked pretty awesome. Good. 24 snaps on defense and a couple on special teams. Unfortunately, Tejon Karoma was injured and waived before the preseason game. Harvey Longy, who we've been talking about, got hit this last week and is likely out 4 to 5 weeks due to concerns with his kidneys. So unfortunately, that comeback story has been put on hold. A few other things, but we're gonna pass and just keep moving. Fred Warner, I should mention Warner for certain, did not play because of an injury in their preseason game. And Jamal Williams had 13 snaps, 5 carries for 16 yards, and an 8-yard touchdown catch. All right, Matt. In other news, Francis Bernard, as had been rumored for some time, has joined the University of Utah. As is always the case when people leave the program, good luck to Francis, though I hope he plays poorly when we play Utah, if he's playing. That's not personal.
No, that's not personal. That's just business.
I hope that for all Utes that day.
Right, but other than that, like, you know, best of luck to the kid. I mean, he clearly got it. You know, ran into some tough spots. You know, and you never want that type of stuff to define who a person is, right? Well, so hopefully he gets a chance to.
Yeah, and I hope
turn things around, better himself. Good for him.
Makes better decisions and has a successful career, just not when he's playing BYU.
Yep.
All right, Matt. Football. He had an interesting one from Facebook #FaceBag. From Daniel Smith. He says, who is your favorite player on the team right now, and who do you think it will be at the end of the season? Matt, do you have a favorite player?
I do. I actually do.
All right. Who's your favorite player?
Is it okay for somebody our age to have a favorite player?
Sure it is.
Or is that weird?
Do you have a favorite hymn in the hymn book?
I'd have to think about that one.
You probably do, and it's still
I don't know that I can narrow it down to a single hymn. Are we really talking about this?
I don't know, man. I've already given a mission story.
Do you have a favorite hymn in the hymn book? Is there a more, like, I don't know what a zoob is. Like, I don't know what that term means. But is there more of, like, a zoob question to be asked on a BYU Rise and Shout podcast than do you have a favorite song in the hymn book? Did you really just do that to us? Is that the level you just pushed us to?
Yes. I am about as zoob-like as I think you can get. Whatever that means. Like you said, I don't know what it means.
But I feel like what you just did really defines it.
Oh, yes, because nobody who didn't go to BYU ever makes jokes about the church. Right, right.
On a sports podcast.
Well, I mean, how many sports podcasts are hosted by us? One. So
it's the only one I do.
Anyway, who's your favorite player?
Butch Powell.
Butch Powell is your favorite player. I have a favorite player. Braden El Bakri.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, man. I love watching him block. I love him on special teams. Like, and he's got a scholarship this year after being a walk-on. I love walk-ons. Walk-ons, you know, it's cool. That's probably my favorite player. By the end of the season, it'll be El Bakri still. I mean, I imagine. I think there's a very good chance if Zach Wilson were to end up getting the starting job and doing a great job, that he might be my favorite at the end.
Do you know who I hope is my favorite at the end?
Who? Tanner?
Squally Canada.
Squally Canada. What a great
I hope
name.
I'm wrong, right? We talked about this last week. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Squally Canada just crushes it and that he's awesome and that I can just love it. Yeah. That's what I hope.
Yeah. Well, we had one tweet bag question as a follow-up from our defensive preview last week from Ryan Crockett. Here's what he says. You established the opinion last week that the defense will be at a similar level as last year's squad, which we did. But he says this, Matt, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. Do you think that having an offense that can sustain drives will have a positive impact on the defense? It seemed to me, this is Ryan speaking, that last year's slump with the defense was a why try issue, and who can blame them? Couldn't the same skill set appear to be better simply because of the time of possession and morale? #Gokus, #ClimbOnIn, #HotDogs are not sandwiches. And he says, P.S., saying hot dog sandwich is like saying you drive an SUV car. No need for the broad and antiquated technical term when your first word already gives you a more precise and accurate description of the object. Ryan, winner, winner, chicken dinner. Thank you. We're done with the debate. Thank you, Ryan. Anyway, Matt, going back to his first
it's a sandwich.
Question. Shut up! You've Ryan just ended the debate.
Now, listen. If he would have said, if he would have used ATM machine as his example, I might listen to
it. No, this is better. No, ATM machine isn't the same thing. Because ATM machine is about repetitiveness. He's not saying repetitiveness. He's saying SUV is a more precise term. Hot dog is a more precise term. So even if you're right that hot dog is a sandwich, saying hot dog sandwich is absolutely ridiculous.
Right, but let me ask you this. So is an SUV not a car?
No, he's not saying that. That's not what his argument is.
But is an SUV a type of a car?
An SUV is a type of a vehicle.
Oh, see, now you're splitting hairs because you understand where I'm going.
Go back to his question. Do you think that having a better offense means that the defense might have been better last year, but maybe they just kind of gave up because the offense was so putrid?
So I believe that having an offense that can sustain drives will have a positive impact on the defense. That's just true, right? The longer if you can keep the defense off the field a little bit longer, you know, without all the four and outs and without, you know, like in the LSU game, you can't even get across the 50, right? So they're playing in their own territory the entire four quarters, right? So that's going to hurt any defense, no matter how good you are. That's going to hurt you. Now, is that the issue? Was that the difference maker for this defense? I seem to think not. If we go back and think about some of the games last year and some of the issues that we've identified with the defense, I think lack of adjustments and game planning that didn't seem to focus real clearly on what a given opponent was going to do offensively really is where the issues, at least my issues, are with the defense. So while I do think the time of possession will help, I don't feel like the defense gave up, and it was a total lack of ability to adjust is really where my beef with the defense is.
Yeah, I think you're right in a lot of ways, but here's what I'm going to say, okay? I think that it's an overrated thing. I believe that it's true, everything you just said. But in 2012, we had a below average offense, okay? 63rd, according to S&P Plus from Football Outsiders. We had one of the best defenses BYU has ever had, rated 6th in the nation, right? You remember that Boise State game?
Yep.
Did you see any lack of effort despite total offensive ineptitude from Kyle Van Noy and the BYU Cougars in 2012?
No, those guys did not give up.
So here's my thing. I get it that this offense was way worse than the 2012 offense. Made the 2012 offense and the 2013 offense look fantastic by comparison, okay? But my point is, at some point, there's a lot of great offensive teams that have bad defenses, and there's a lot of bad, really good defensive teams that have bad. Did I just say the same thing twice? Anyway, reverse it. You get what I'm saying. The point
scratch
is.
Scratch that. Reverse it.
Reverse it. I just don't. I think it's overrated. I don't think the defensive team was mediocre last year because the offense was bad. I think it probably knocked them down a little bit, though. But maybe it knocked them down a lot because they were historically bad.
But you know what? I think there's a chicken and egg thing here to this too, right? Is that you could flip the script on this and say, well, the defense was bad, which also put the offense in bad positions, right? So I don't know that I could make that argument necessarily with this team, but that's an argument sometimes people will make. You get down by 14 points, now you're having to throw the ball more so the defense can pin their ears back and really put a pass rush on. Or you know, that you can't flip the field position because defensively, you know, you're doing this bend, don't break. So, you know, they're always coming down into your red zone or they're punting to you from midfield or whatever it is, right? And so your offense never really gets into a good spot. There is this relationship between the offense and the defense. Certainly, I mean, there is certainly an impact from one to the other, but I just feel like my criticism on the defense stands on its own.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's know the foe a little bit. Matt, we're going to preview a few games, but before we do, via email, and if you want to email the show, you can do it riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Chase Blyle says this, y'all have been doing a 1 to 10 scale on how scared you are about certain games. I have to disagree, he says. For him, Washington, Wisconsin, even Boise State are probably between a 1 and a 3. I have no expectations of winning, thus I'm at a low stress level. If you ask me how scared I am about Utah State, Northern Illinois, and even UMass, sadly I'm an 8 to 10. Those are teams we couldn't beat last year, and until I see us play, I'm terrified we are going to lose again. I'm not embarrassed or scared about losing to Wisconsin. I am terrified of losing to UMass 2 years in a row. Love the show. Keep it up. Our scale was about likelihood of us losing. Fear was probably the wrong word on my part. But if what Chase is saying, the stress level, I totally agree. I will not have a high stress level against Washington.
I will. I'm going to be all amped up.
Well, I'll be amped up, but I'm just saying, like, if we start getting behind, if we're behind in the third quarter to UMass, and you and I are there in person, what is our demeanor going to be?
I'm going to be ready to start flipping cars over and lighting stuff on fire.
Okay, all right. So if we're behind in the third quarter to Washington, what's your demeanor going to be?
Nah.
You're not going to be happy. Well, I'm not saying
no. I won't be happy, but I'm not going to be flipping cars over and lighting stuff on fire.
So Chase,
which
is
for
right.
the record, I won't actually be doing at any point.
Yes, you just need to make that clear in case anybody.
My lawyer has advised me to say that.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, let's go talk about Wisconsin first. All right, Wisconsin, the Badges, the Wisconsin Badges. So last year,
you don't need no stinking badges.
You don't need no stinking badges. Last year they were 13-1. We're a couple of plays away from being in the college football playoff, probably, right?
Yep.
Obviously then beat Miami in the Orange Bowl and made people look good. Matt, we know this team pretty well. We've played them recently. Jonathan Taylor, the running back, is amazing and will continue to be amazing, right?
Yep.
Their offense is led by a quarterback who's experienced and maybe not the best quarterback, but a good quarterback. And then their offensive line is also amazing. So basically, good luck BYU defense.
Wow. Well, there you go.
But it gets worse, Matt. Because their defense is actually maybe the better unit.
So oh, this year, no, now we're going to talk about the defense.
Yeah, so their linebacker core, probably three of their top players, maybe their best three players, are all linebackers, and they're all seniors. TJ Edwards, Ryan Connolly, Andrew Van Ginkle. If I'm missing anybody, I apologize. And they have, but they're reloading a little bit on the defensive line and defensive backfield. But depending on who you read and what preview you look at, some people say it's truly reloading, not a rebuild, right? Because they've recruited so well at some of those positions. Other people aren't as optimistic. Their corners, they've got, anyway, we'll see. We'll see. I have to say I'm more scared about their defense than I am the offense.
Well, if you look at what they did last year, if you look at the last couple of years, I mean, nobody scores a lot of points on this team.
No. Their defense is tough as nails every year.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy, right? I mean, you look at the stats. I mean, what's the most points they gave up last year was 24, right?
Yeah. If BYU scores 20, we're going to be like high-fiving. Right.
But to your point, like if BYU scores 20 last year, they still lose by three scores.
Right. Well, I'm just saying the offense, you'll feel better about if they could score 20 points on this team on the road, that's a good day for the offense. Right. I don't think the defense can hold this offense down enough. But we'll see. We'll see. Right now, Football Outsiders has them pegged at 9-3. And you may say 9-3. But here's their schedule, Matt, on the road.
It's a tougher schedule this year.
At Iowa, at Michigan, at Northwestern, at Penn State, at Purdue. Now, Northwestern and Purdue, not as intense as maybe Michigan and Iowa, but both of those teams will not be pushovers on the road, most likely. Northwestern is probably a top 40 team, and Purdue is a much improved team, maybe top 50. So again, Wisconsin probably wins both of those, but they might drop one of those, and they're likely to lose at Michigan and at Penn State. You know, I don't know if likely is the thing, but I think they're a 10-win team. I think they're 10-2, but I think they drop two of those road games. Their home slate, I know people make fun of our home slate sometimes. Western Kentucky, New Mexico, BYU, Nebraska, Illinois, Rutgers, and Minnesota. I'm just saying, we aren't the only ones that sometimes have a rough home schedule. And think of their November games, Rutgers and Minnesota. Those are their two November games. I'm just saying, it's not just us. Football Outsiders has them projected as the 12th best team this year, 8th best defense, 25th best offense. Matt, let's use Chase's scale and the scale. This is the second best team we're likely to play besides Washington, right?
Yeah.
We're going to lose by multiple scores, right?
Yes.
I mean, based on what we know today. I won't be super nervous to use Chase's 1 to 10 scale. It's like a 2 to me, because I think we're going to lose on the road to Wisconsin.
I think I will be nervous until sometime mid-second quarter.
Okay.
And then I'll let go of the dream.
Okay. You'll let go of the dream at that point. All right. That's fair. All right, Matt. Let's talk about Boise State.
Boise's not a state.
Stop it. Come on. Don't make fun of our new rivals. Don't make fun of them.
I'm going to say that a lot this year. I'm just warning to you. I've thought about even having a t-shirt made.
So, Matt, let me ask you a question. Brett Rippon, good quarterback, bad quarterback, somewhere in between?
Brett Rippon, never heard of her.
Oh, my gosh, you're terrible today. This show is like we're just off the rails. Should we just stop now?
So what was the scale?
I've told a mission story.
Terrible quarterback. You asked me what my favorite hymn in the hymn.
I asked you what your favorite hymn is.
This is just getting weird.
Now let's
get this back on track. We can do this. So what was the scale? What was the scale you just gave me?
I gave it. Good quarterback. Okay, I'll put it this way: is he a really good quarterback, like top 20 quarterback?
No.
Is he that next tier down? Top 40. I think he's definitely top 40.
Yeah, he may be top 40. I'd give him that.
Borderline top 20 in the could be if everything falls together. He did lose his best receiver, or I can't think of the name.
Yeah, neither can anybody in the NFL. But I think that that's when you find out how good this guy is.
You
that's,
are in that's fuego.
That's you know how I feel Spanish, about Boise State. But that's how you find out. That's how you find it out, right? Like, so this is the time that, you know, he doesn't have the tools he used to have, and he's coming back, and you know, hopefully he's healthy for his sake, right? It's Cedric Wilson is who he lost. But he gets a lot of other pieces back, right? So I don't know that this is if the good analogy here is, I can't even come up with a good analogy here, but he gets a lot of the rest of the offense back. And I think most of his offensive line is still intact.
I think he's going to be good.
Find out how good he is, you know. But do I think he's a top 20 college football quarterback? No.
Okay, fair enough. The defense, on the other hand, according to College Football News Preview, they think there are 8 guys on the defense who could all be named the best defensive player by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to agree with them. I think this is not a – there are stars. I'm not saying there aren't stars. This is going to be a top 20 defense, and they're going to have a bunch of guys play really, really well. And this one worries me because of their defense.
But you know what I find fascinating about the defense? If you go into the preview that was on at SB Nation, right?
Yeah, yep.
They've got this breakdown of Boise State in 2017 where they look at the first 4 games compared to the last 10 games. And the stuff that sticks out to me on the defense here, right? So those first 4 games, they were 2-2, and then they went 9-1 with their last 10 games down the stretch. Now, the average score per opponent went from 29 down to 20. But average yards per play by opponent went from 4.7 to 4.9. And even, I think, more telling is that the percentile performance of their defense went from 56 to 67. Right? So, but so I feel like there's two stories here being told where, you know, they, the average yards per play didn't really change much. They did bring, but they brought the scoring down. But I, if you look at the schedule, I don't know that were those teams that much worse. Were those teams that much better? Like, were they, where they should be getting is just as many yards per play, but not getting into the end zone. And, you know, is this a bend don't break type of a situation? I don't know, but I just, I don't know what we really know about their defense based on their performance last year.
And here's the other problem with Boise State and evaluating them is their schedule.
Yes.
Right? So they, like you said, the first four games, they lose two of them. One of them's Virginia at home. The other one's Washington State on the road in a three overtime shootout, right? Crazy game. Okay, then they beat us. We weren't good. I don't know. I don't mean to be breaking any news on the podcast. They beat San Diego State, Wyoming, Utah State, Nevada, Colorado State, Air Force, Fresno State, and beat Fresno State 2 weeks in a lost Fresno State and then beat them in the Mountain West Conference game, and then beat Oregon in the bowl game. And Oregon was not a great team either; had a losing record in the Pac-12. So part of the problem with advanced stats, like we're talking about, is in college football, you don't play enough common opponents to make them as powerful as they are in the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever else, right? So I think you're right in that we may not, the numbers may be saying something that isn't actually true, right?
Yes, right.
And I think you're right. I think you're right. And I,
how does your percentile performance make that kind of a jump, but your yards per play essentially stays still? It's because the teams you were playing couldn't finish drives.
Teams you were playing couldn't finish drives. There was also, you know, the best offense they played was week two, right? And after that, they didn't play really great offenses.
And I think that if you look at their 2018 schedule, right, I think you can use this to tell you something. You look at the win probability, the only team where they have a less than 50% chance, actually, if we just call it what it is, the only team where they have less than a 67% chance of winning is Oklahoma State in year three, week three.
Yeah.
And if you look down the stretch, like if you start in October – like mid-October, those percentages are 81, 86, 85, 78, 67, 85, and 78. Right? Most of their games that are in the 60s and one in the 40s are all front-loaded in the first 4 weeks of the season. So I think it's hard to look and see, and get a feel for, oh, these guys really turned it on down the stretch, or they really figured it out, or look at these monster numbers, right? You look at some of where they're ranked, where they were ranked defensively last year, you know, forced 15 fumbles, which was 12th in FBS, 26 takeaways, which was 16th. Those are pretty good numbers. But when you're playing teams where you have an 80% chance of winning, like
you can take chances. You can take
all sorts of chances. And you're playing teams like New Mexico and Fresno State, like you can do some things that you wouldn't do against other teams that will turn into turnovers. So I'm not saying that I think their defense is bad. I'm just saying I don't know how good they really are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also saying this is not one of the best teams Boise State will have ever had, right? This is there's nothing in what they did last year and who they have coming back and all those things where I say this is a Boise State team that's going to go undefeated. Right, they're likely, as you pointed out, to lose on the road to Oklahoma State. They're probably going to drop, as has been their pattern in the last few years, a game or two in conference. You know, at Wyoming, maybe, probably not. San Diego State, Fresno State. But you look at those three teams that I just mentioned as the most likely candidates, there's not probably a top 50 team in the three of them.
Right.
So, and those are the best chances they have at losing. In the end, really depends on how BYU lands, their chances of making a splash really come in that first few weeks, because Oklahoma State's by far the best team they're going to play, right? Mm-hmm. Based on preseason projections, whatever they're worth. But they do get to play UConn the week before, so that's nice. UConn's bad.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So, anyway, Matt, I'm not super nervous about Boise State. I actually think we beat Boise State.
I think that we've got a really good chance against Boise State. I know that here they're favoring Boise State to win that game, but I think it's hard to predict that matchup right now because we just don't know what we're going to look like offensively.
Yeah.
But I think this is a winnable game for us.
This is a winnable game. I agree. I will be very nervous this whole game.
Yeah, but these games, I mean, if this is anything Chase's. Like the classic Boise State games, you know, yeah, this will be a tense game.
Well, and we'll need – this is a game where the defense, because I think despite our discussion right now, I still think it's above average defense. And this will be – at that point in the year, by November, we'll know if this offense is any good, right? And if the offense is good, then the defense is just going to have to come and make some plays so that the offense can win us that game on the road, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's what we're looking for. If the offense is terrible – well, I'm going to change my tune, right? Right? If we haven't generated offense, say, in the previous weeks against Utah State, Hawaii, and Northern Illinois, then I'm going to feel very different about this game. But, anywho.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
All right. Northern Illinois, Matt. We're going to do this one real quick. Are you nervous about Northern Illinois? I did a lot of research on them this week. I don't think they're going to be that great. I'm not nervous about this one anymore at home. I'm done being nervous.
Yeah, I think when we talked about this before, I had some nervousness around this one. But you look at the numbers and you look at where people feel like this team stands, and this is one we really ought to come out with a win. I mean, it's a home game. We've had plenty of time to figure out at this point, and this team's not projected to be very good.
No. They do have some good defense. But I mean, this is not a team, like you said, to be scared of, and their offense might end up being nearly as bad as ours was last year. So even if they have a decent defense, I don't know that it matters, at all. So I'm not too worried about this. So we'll move on. All right, Matt, we need to preview the offense, which we've talked a ton about the offense in the off season. So we're going to go through this fairly fast. We've also filled up our time talking about tacos. So, shows you what we prioritize, which is food. Matt, I'm going to start off. We're going to play a game through the offensive preview of buy or sell the statement I'm going to make. And that's how
awesome.
We're going to preview the offense. All right.
Love this game.
Overall, buy or sell, Jeff Grimes is going to have the best offense we've had since 2001.
Oh, in this year?
I'll give him 2 years.
So in 2018 or 2019?
In 2018 or 2019, he will have the best offense we've had since that amazing offense of 2001, which we've had some very good top 25 type of offenses since then with Beck and Hall.
Yeah, I'm selling that.
I'm buying it. I'm You're all crazy. In with Jeff Grimes.
You're crazy. You and your Jeff Grimes mustache.
That's right. That's right. Buy or sell Jeff Grimes, all of his talk about discipline and execution.
I'm buying it.
I am also buying that. I don't think it's just coach speak. All right.
No, I think that's for real.
Buy or sell, the offensive line will be the best unit on the offense in 2018.
Buying that.
I am buying it. Buy or sell on the offensive line that the reason is the new offensive line coach and Jeff Grimes.
I'm buying that as well.
I think the offensive line is going to be, we're going back to some prior days when our offensive lines were feared. by our
opponents. And you look, and at least some of those offensive lines were coached by Grimes.
Yes.
And true, I think that the rotating guys around, the depth, and those types of things are really gonna make a difference.
All right. Well, let's go to another unit. How about this? The second buy or sell, the second best unit on the offense will be the tight ends.
I'm selling that.
I am as well. But it is an intriguing thing that I'm even asking that and you didn't laugh.
Well, what I think is interesting here is I'm not sure that they can't be, but what the key component to that is going to be what happens at quarterback.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But in the end, if they provide a ton of value, that can make a quarterback look better, right?
I guess that's true, depending on scheme and you know, how they're presented as an option to the quarterback. I get what you're saying.
Now, I mean, here's the thing. We've had very little tight end, good tight end play for several years. And part of that has to do with the, since Dennis Pitta, stop it. Is that true?
Since Chad Lewis and Atula Mealy.
Not since Chad Lewis and Atula Mealy. That's ridiculous.
Who was the last great tight end?
I'm not saying great. I'm saying good. Maybe it was Pitta. Anyway, the point.
Like Harleen hung around on a couple of rosters a little bit.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, a couple of these guys, you know, came through and did some things and were pretty good.
We haven't had that over the last few seasons, right?
It's been a long time.
So now all of a sudden we're talking about depth there. Here's the thing I'm going to say. The only tight end we know for sure that can play at a high level is Bushman. I believe that MLP will play at a high level, both blocking and passing. I believe Nwigwe will be a very good blocker, and anything he can give us as a pass catcher is bonus.
If he has a single reception, that's a win.
Yes. I believe that we have a couple of good tight ends that are not likely to play this year, a couple of freshmen, or not play a lot, not going to be major factors. And all of those things are okay, and this unit will be one of the best we've had in a long time.
I hope you're right.
You know, heck, just having one really good one makes it better than what we've had for a long time. Matt, buy or sell, the wide receivers will once again disappoint.
I'm buying it. I'm nuts.
I'm going to sell that one. I don't think they're going to disappoint, but I don't think they're going to be... I still think it's not going to be our strongest part of our offense.
I just want to see somebody work through a bump and run. A bump at the line of scrimmage. I just want to see him work through it and get off the ball.
I mean, if you look at the film on Colley at Hawaii, and again, competition is an issue there, but he was able to do some of that. So I think we may have a couple of guys that can do that. So if that's where your expect bar has been set, I think they'll get past that one.
That's the skill I'm looking for.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Buy or sell, Matt, that nobody in the running back core rushes for more than 800 yards.
Buy.
I am selling that. Squally Canada rushes.
So who is it?
Yards. Squally Canada.
So you, I don't know.
They just are looking for depth.
You're making me nervous. The way they're approaching this whole thing with the running backs is making me nervous. It feels like a signal that they don't think he's there. Like I said earlier, I hope they're wrong. I'm hoping that by the end of the season, the Squally Can is my favorite player. Yeah. I'm ready to have a fifth child and name it Squally. That's how I want to feel about Squally Can at the end of the season. I just don't know. Right now, I just don't have the... I don't believe yet.
Joining the five kid club, huh, buddy?
That's not going to happen, actually. I went too far.
Yeah, he did go too far. He did go too far. And anyway, Matt... How about this? This one comes courtesy of friend of the podcast and Daily Herald writer, Darnell Dixon.
Here we go.
Are you ready for this?
Oh, yeah. Let's take a look at this.
Buy or sell, this is the deepest group of quarterbacks BYU's had in 20 years.
It's pretty fascinating as a question, isn't it?
Not really. I'm selling it.
So who's the deeper group?
I don't know. Pick one.
This group is so deep. This group is so deep that we took Bo Hodge and moved him out of it.
Bo Hodge, the guy that played two quarters.
And who was it that told us last week in their tweetback question that it was the best half any quarterback had all season?
Great. Great. You know, in a season like that, I guess you got to take what you can get. These questions are very hard to answer future-looking, right? It's very easy to answer backwards-looking. And Darnell talks about that in the deal. Like, you would have thought at one point that Matt Berry, Brett Ingemann group was super deep, right?
Yep, it felt deep.
Felt deep. We had two guys, pretty highly recruited, seemed pretty good. Berry
in
particular.
Yeah, but, you know, Berry got injured. You know, he did break his hand.
And Ingemann got yanked around, like, one of the worst handling of quarterbacks I've ever seen. I mean, right. If he even looked at Croton Weird, he replaced him.
Yeah, that was a weird situation.
So, and I'm not saying either of those guys would have been great, but... Matt, you there?
Yeah, I'm back. I lost you for a second.
Okay.
But, are we back?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm just waiting for you to keep going.
Okay. Well, I think I don't remember where I was, so I'm just going to jump back in here. But if you look at this group, to his point in this article here, to Darnell's point, as we get inside Darnell's head, which is a great name for this, what he does here. But in 2009, Max Hall, James Lark, Riley Nelson, Brad Sorensen, look at that group. You know, like, was anybody expecting James Lark to eventually be a starter, which he became, right? Kind of he was the last man standing, but... He was a starter. Riley Nelson was, you know, and Max Hall turned out to be Max Hall. That's a pretty deep group that I think probably competes here. And you have the benefit of hindsight when you look at them, right? Right now, the problem is you look at a guy like Zach Wilson and shoot, he looks really good as a freshman. But, you know, we had a lot of hope for a lot of these freshmen. You know, we had Drew Miller who started as a freshman. He's not even he's never listed anywhere in here, right? You got... Jake Heaps, the classic freshman example. So you don't know how deep this group really is because you've only at this point, you know, you've only seen a couple of them play.
Well, and here's the thing: most of them of this group have never taken a snap at the collegiate level, right? At this point, right. You've got Critchlow, who played mediocrely against terrible teams. Okay, you've got Tanner, who's got a mixed record. Had some great games and then some not so great games. And then the rest of these guys have never played. Zach Wilson has played some spring ball. Jaron Hall looks highly talented and very athletic. Stacey Connor, Darnell points it out, here is an intriguing prospect, right? Because of athleticism. And I still think eventually he might play another position, but maybe not. Maybe he's the best one of the group. I don't know. At one point, Steve Young was, as everybody knows, was way far back on the depth chart. Was being asked to
switch. He was going to be a safety.
So you look at that and you say, okay, is this the deepest group we've had in 20 years? Maybe, right? It could be. Tanner was highly recruited. Zach Wilson was somewhat highly recruited. Same with Jaron Hall, maybe a little bit. Some of these other guys, not as much. You know, Critchlow, not as much. Stacey Connor, not as much. So you look at this group and you go, okay, if you're Grimes, you're feeling good because it looks better than maybe it has in some past years. But I'm not ready. I'm selling that statement. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're there yet. Okay, Matt. Overall in the offense, let's play a little buy or sell overall on the offense. Okay.
All right. What do you got?
We'll finish. Buy or sell? This offense is substantially better than last year, and by that I mean 20, 30 spots up in the rankings of offenses.
I'm going to buy that.
I will buy that as well. Buy or sell that we have, by the end of the year, a quarterback who's considered a top 40 college quarterback.
I'm going to sell that.
I'm going to buy it. I don't think that...
But that's got to be close, because it's hard to have one of those things without the other.
Correct. But it's possible because your offense can be an amazing run offense, right? Which I wouldn't put it past Grimes if we were a run-first team, right? He's an offensive linebacker. Well, and if you're right
about Squally Canada, it's very possible that that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And they're looking for depth because they know that he's going to be a workhorse on the first couple of downs, right? And so they need a third down back.
Completely just me out of my brain. You know, we said inside Darnell's head, we're going inside Adam's head.
This is a scary place. Yeah, scary place. Very scary. I'm not comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
I need an adult.
Yeah, don't climb on in. Here's the thing. I think Squally is the primary back. I don't think he rushes for 1,400 yards, but I think he breaks 1,000. I think you get two or three other guys that are getting carries behind him, and then you see Bo Hodge all over the field making plays, okay? So that's why I think he gets over 1,000. I don't know that he's not going to be breaking any records, right? So buy or sell that we have a receiver who leads the team in receptions.
A receiver?
A receiver leads the team in receptions.
I'm going to sell that.
This one's tough for me, and I'll tell you why. I think it will be hard for Bushman to lead the team in receptions, which is kind of what we're saying, right? That's what that question really is. Does Bushman lead the team in receptions? I think it's going to be hard for him to lead the team in receptions in a year where he's not going to catch anybody unaware, right? Everybody knows who he was. He was, all that stuff. And he led the team with 49 receptions. Unless some pass catchers, so it's like a chicken and the egg thing like we were talking about before. If some of the receivers really are good, better than we think they're going to be, and one of the other tight ends emerges as a pass-catching threat, then I think Bushman actually ends up leading the team in receptions. Does that make sense? Because you can't double them.
Right.
Because you're going to get eaten alive. Right? I think he does lead the team in receptions because I think this offense is going to be better, but that's not actually an indictment of the wide receivers.
Does that make sense? It's actually the opposite, right? The argument you're making is that Bushman will lead in receptions because the wide receivers will be better than last year.
Correct. And it leaves him...
And defenses are going to have to account for that.
Yeah. And it leaves him one-on-one with linebackers in either zone or man coverage, which he is likely...
Which is what you want.
In most of the defenses we play this year, that will be a mismatch. Not all of them, right? Against Wisconsin, I don't know that he's going to find any mismatches, right? Bushman is. But against most of the teams we're playing, even some of the good ones, he's going to be a matchup problem. And if they can double him, then you're either going to be trying to force the ball into him or you have to give it to somebody else. And if you give it to somebody else and they're not very good, like you said, they can't break press coverage or whatever else, then whoever the quarterback is going to struggle, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter. And the other piece to this is it's all interconnected because if you get a good running game, you know what tight ends can do in a good running game? Is afterwards have incredible... play action wide open in a zone or man-to-man, right? Because they look like they're going to block, linebacker comes up, and all of a sudden you got Bushman 5 yards behind the guy, right? So all of this is interconnected, and it's hard to say, you know, well, Bushman's going to be the difference maker because in the end, a tight end can't be a difference maker if the rest of the offense isn't doing their job, I don't think. I mean, unless you're Gronkowski, and nothing against Bushman, he's not Gronkowski.
Well, and they put Gronkowski all over the place. They're not going to – I don't think they're going to be doing as much of that with Bushman.
I would be shocked if they didn't do more of it, though.
Do some of it. I think you see him line up in the slot and all these things. I think they will try and create mismatches and give him opportunities to go find pockets in the zone and some of these other – you know, some of that classic stuff that made some of these tight ends that we talked about earlier great, right, was the opportunities that we're giving them. But I think you also have to take into account that we've got this Bo Hodge weapon that's going to take some of those opportunities as well. I think you see Bo Hodge line up in the backfield. I think you see Bo Hodge line up in the slot. You might even see Bo Hodge go out wide, you know, because from a wide spot, he could be a jet sweep threat. He could be, you know, quick pass, bubble screen. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff you could do with Bo Hodge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Out on the
perimeter. That you can't do with Bushman. Right.
Right. But so I think a lot of that, a lot of the downs that are used on those types of plays may go to a Bohage type of activity, right?
You ready for this? You know how last year, 2 years ago, I just wanted to see Tanner Mangum and Taysom on the field together? Right?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, and I thought it'd be great. You know what I want to see? I want to see in the backfield, in the shotgun, the two people lined up next to Tanner, assuming he's going to be the starter, is Bohage and Matt Bushman. What do the linebackers do?
Can you imagine?
What do they do?
Total chaos. They call a timeout.
I mean, because both of them could be going out for passes. Both of them could be staying in for blocking. They're not likely to hand the ball off to Bushman, but it wouldn't be the worst idea ever. They could hand it off to them. It could be a sweep. They could go in motion. I mean, this is the thing that was so lacking in Detmer's offense, besides, the execution wasn't there a lot of the times, was there never seemed to be any desire to try to create mismatches. It was like, we're going to beat you straight up, even though in most cases we have less talent than you. It's just not a good way to play football, quite frankly, at any level, but definitely not in college or the pros, where mismatches are the name of the game, right? And have been. That's not like a new thing, right? Like, Colley was great because most defensive backs in college couldn't cover him, right? He was a mismatch every time, almost every play, and almost every defensive back he lined up against, older Colley, I mean, right? And that's the problem, is if you've got guys who maybe aren't Colley or Dennis Pitta, maybe Bushman's that good, then they don't naturally create the mismatches, so you have to create them for them, right?
You got to scheme your way into that.
Yeah, but Detmer did none of that, right? And I put Bushman and him in there, or other people. There could be other options, right? Besides those two, but do something to help those quarterbacks out. All right, Matt. So I'm not going to say bullish on the offense, but we're pretty excited about the offense.
Well, I think there's plenty of reason to believe that the offense is going to be an improved unit this year. Now, do I think we're talking about moving into a top 20 offense in year one of the Grimes era? No, I doubt that.
So, Matt, I'm going to pull the listeners behind the curtain. All right? I'm going to pull behind the curtain because I've been making references to this mission story and stuff. I'm about to take out like 3 minutes of that intro. So any references I've made to this mission story, it wasn't that interesting. I'm going to take it out because there's a couple things I'd rather us talk about here at the end, and we're running out of time. The biggest one is a Facebook question from Pat Hammond, all right? Or a comment more than a question. She says, I was seriously considering going to the Seattle game since my parents live there and a visit home is always nice, she says. But I haven't managed to pull the trigger on plane tickets because I had a sinking feeling that it would be a mistake. So thank you for the reality check, because paying lots of money to attend a lynching is not my idea of fun. Keep up the good work. Big fan of the podcast. # climb on in. I don't know that we were trying to talk anybody out of it. I'm just saying, if I had to pick a game, going to Washington this particular year would not be my favorite.
So I think a good example here is this. While our parents no longer live in Massachusetts, let's just say that game in Massachusetts was against
Alabama.
Yeah, there you go. Would you still go to that game?
I don't know.
We get to go back. I mean, because I haven't been back home in a long time.
Here's the
right?
flip side.
So
Pat.
Do you still make that trip? Maybe you still make that trip. But I think what we're saying is, Pat, walk into here. If you're going to that game, walk in with your eyes wide open.
Here's the problem with what we said last week, okay? Problem. The other side of it. You don't – if BYU somehow wins that game in Washington, it goes down as one of the best games of all time for BYU. Yep. Assuming Washington somehow didn't just fall off and become a terrible team, right? But I don't foresee that in any way, shape, or form. As we talked about last week, we think they're going to be a top five type of team. Okay, all right. You will miss that opportunity. The chances of that happening, I think, are pretty close to zero. So,
but what I don't want to have happen here is that it happens, And then now we're held responsible for talking Pat out of it.
We are responsible. Did you just listen to that? We are responsible. It will be on our consciences if Pat.
I don't think I want to live with that.
One of the most famous BYU fans on Twitter doesn't end up seeing one of the best wins in BYU history. It'll be our fault.
That makes me uncomfortable.
Own what you say, man. You can't you can't waffle like you usually do on this one. Maybe you can.
Oh, I'm a waffler.
So you're telling Pat she needs to book tickets?
No, I'm not saying. I don't want to say either thing now.
I knew you were going to do this. I set you up so well.
I don't know what to say anymore. I don't know what to do.
Here's the thing. I probably won't go to the Wisconsin game this week because of non-BYU football-related issues. But I was planning on going to that because it's 3.5 hours from my house, even though we'll likely not do well. And that was true the last time they were in
And Madison, it was a great time.
And we had a good time. Seattle's a cool town. And again, Pat would get to visit family. For some of the rest of us, it'd be more of a thing. I know Justin Sweeney told us on Twitter that he's going to go probably to that game. So, I mean, people are
but
going.
But here's the thing, too, is if you live, you know, somewhere and this is the closest game for you, like you should just go.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
if I were close, if I lived in Seattle, I'd be going, right?
Like I was going to drive last year from Baton Rouge to Houston. You know, of course, I ended up having to go to New Orleans for that game, which was a much closer drive. But, you know, I was going to go to that game either way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, well, we'll end on a Sweeney tweet bag.
Sweeney tweet bag.
He says, which choice is the most likely? A, Tanner Mangum starts every game this year. 2, BYU beats at least 2 of Boise State, Wisconsin, or Northern Illinois. Or D, Zach Wilson is named starter by at least the Cal game. Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag really subtle Home Alone reference. Hashtag still too scared to climb on in. Matt, we'll finish with this. What is the most likely? Tanner Mangum starts every game. BYU beats 2 of Boise State, Wisconsin, Northern Illinois. Or Zach Wilson is named starter by the Cal game.
So of his three options, A, 2, and D, love the reference, I'm going with 2. I think that it is most likely that BYU beats 2 of Boise State, Wisconsin, or NIU because I feel reasonably positive about 2 of those games. And I think that in any season, a starting quarterback making it through the entire stretch and starting every single game, you're talking no injury, you're talking a lot of variables there. That's a hard bet to take. And Zach Wilson getting named starter by the Cal game feels early.
What would have to happen against Arizona is I think Mangum gets hurt, right? I mean, that's what – I can't imagine they pull Tanner after one game if they decided he was the guy. They could, depending on how well he played or not well in that first game. But I'm going to imagine they're going to give him through Wisconsin, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, you definitely don't want – Zach Wilson starting against Wisconsin for his first collegiate start on the road.
Right. So what do you do? Did you throw him in against Cal? I don't know that you want it to be. I don't know.
That's a home
game. If it's Cal or Wisconsin, I think I choose Cal. Right.
Oh yeah, you definitely choose Cal in that scenario. I'm just saying, like, if you know, I think you give Tanner through game 3, and if he's just being terrible, then Zach gets a game against McNeese State before he has to start at Husky Stadium in Seattle. Oh my gosh. That's terrible. I think Zach Wilson, that one is the least likely. I think you're probably right that the second one is the most likely, but I actually think Tanner Mangum starting the whole year, you're right. I mean, quarterbacks don't always do that. It's not safe to put a lot of money on that, but I actually think that's the most likely of those three. Because Wisconsin, you're going to lose, which means you basically have to beat Boise State on the road and Northern Illinois. And I think that, though I think you're right, that we should be favored in both those games by the time they come around, I don't think we're going to be favored by that much, especially against Boise State on the road. Even Northern Illinois at home, what I said earlier, I think we're going to win. They're not a terrible team, right? So, I don't know. Oh. Anyway, well, Matt, we'll be back next week. Next week we have... Sorry, go ahead. I cut you off.
No, I'm good.
Oh. I feel like there's phantom things you say. Like...
I didn't make a sound.
Oh, you totally made a sound. You totally made a sound. Next week, it's going to be our big prediction show. You just did it again. You're such a tool. Anyway.
That time I did, but the time before that, I don't know what you're talking about.
Sure you don't.
I was letting you do your outro stuff. I was letting it roll.
Okay, good. That's good. All right. Next week, it's our big prediction show, Matt. We do over-unders. We do all sorts of stuff that we do every year, and we're wrong every year. Okay?
Man, we got real football. We're getting ready to start here. Now I'm getting nervous.
And we'll also preview Utah State and Utah. And then in 2 weeks, Matt, you and I will be on this show previewing an actual football game, Arizona State.
I don't know how I feel about this. This is getting crazy.
2 weeks. I'm excited. We beat Arizona game one. I'm blue goggles right now, dude. And then Cal. We beat them both. We're 2-0.
Can you imagine if we're 2-0 going into Wisconsin? You're going to want to go to that game at that point. You still may not be able to, but you're going to want to.
I want to go to that game now. But if they're 0-2, I'm going to be really glad that personal circumstances are pointing me in a different direction.
But I'll tell you what, if they're 2-2 going into the Washington game, I mean, maybe it'll be a little competitive.
Maybe.
All right, let's not get crazy.
All right, well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. If you don't already, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiceShout. Thank you, as always, for downloading and listening. And a hot dog is not a sandwich.
Go Cougars.